Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. And that's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group now with over 15,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie expat based in Qatar. And each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Say hi. Hi, Nikki.
Hello, Nikki.
Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of, how do you say pregnancy test in Arabic? And how long can one family survive on the contents of a hotel minibar? How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I am fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. I'm all good. Now, I was just thinking, last week you mentioned emergency contacts in the intro. Mm-hmm. What about emergency numbers? What's the emergency number to dial in Doha if you have an emergency?
I believe the number in Doha is 999, but having directed hundreds of Ubers to our front door, I don't have a lot of faith in the ambulance or the police getting to my front door. Do you know, we once got stranded in the desert and rang the police, and about an hour later we still hadn't seen anyone, so we were very lucky that our friend Mike came and saved us. So, yeah, I don't know. It's really, that is the measure of an expat location, isn't it? Is your confidence of emergency details. Like, you're in Hamburg. I imagine you feel quite confident if you were to ring the fire department or the police. Yeah.
112. That's the number to call, fire department or police. And they speak English. But I know what you mean. I've once bundled my husband in a car and driven him to emergency in the middle of the night in South Africa instead of calling an ambulance, because I just thought this is the way we're going to get there quicker.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I do remember there was a lot of conversation about that in my baby group in Jakarta about, you know, because the traffic was so bad. It was like, well, what would actually happen if you called the ambulance? Would it get to you in time of a, you know, choking baby or a whatever? What would be the best thing to do? And I do believe there might have been one crazy, well, I shouldn't say crazy, overzealous mother in our group that called the ambulance to test it out.
To test it. Oh, not everyone sit down and take a first aid course, but no.
Oh, no, we'd all done that. That was another part of our, you know, overzealous mothering group. We were all first-time mums apart from, I reckon there was one woman, and oh, my gosh, when I think back now, we must have driven her nuts. Do you know that whole thing where she had three kids at that stage, yeah, and we're saying things as new mothers like, oh, my God, I can't even imagine how I'm going to get my hair done. I remember, you know, I've been in other locations where it's all about being medevaced out of the country. But even then, having said that, I do remember going back to Australia with four children who would have been under nine at that stage, and having the first night at the beach without a husband and without house set up and without knowing any neighbours. And my youngest had a massive asthma attack, and thinking, what are the rules for calling an ambulance? Can I put all four children in the ambulance to go, or, you know,
can we all go together?
Yeah. Is the ambulance going to get here? And they're going to say, I'm sorry, but you can't put all those children in this ambulance with you. What would that look at? And I did the whole bundled them into the car and just drove, you know, thinking, please, everybody be alive by the time we get to the other end. Now, what sort of number is, what did you say it was for Hamburg, the emergency number?
112.
Why 112? Where does that come from?
I don't know. I just accept that that's what it is, and it's in on our fridge in big numbers. Call this number.
911 is America, isn't it? And
yep.
999 or no, 000 in Australia for an emergency.
Correct.
Unless it's just the police you're after and it's not full on emergency, then you have to dial 131444.
Yeah, that's another number to learn. Just put them on the fridge. I say when we move to a new country, I work it all out and I stick it on the fridge.
Yeah.
And then should the children try and burn down the kitchen when I'm not here, then that's the number they should call after they use the emergency fire extinguisher.
Nikki, geographically challenged. Are you feeling geographically challenged at the moment, or have you had a geographical challenge, or have you spoken to someone with a geographical challenge?
Well, I guess in a first world geographical challenge situation, one of my intentions, my New Year's intentions, so not a resolution, I don't think it's as harsh as a resolution, was to host a dinner party once a month.
Oh, nice.
And so in the first weekend of May, I had my first dinner party for the year. So I think I'm on a roll now. But I was planning what to have, and, you know, I was thinking about the olden days when we used to have dinner parties all the time and how it was fun to plan. And then I realized, well, in those days I didn't have to clean my house first and wrangle my children and do all this stuff. So I had planned everything, and I thought lamb, because I'm Australian. Australians like lamb. We know how to prepare lamb. I've got lots of lamb recipes. And then during the day, after I'd done all my shopping and marinated the lamb, I was thinking about it, and I was talking to one of my guests who were coming, and I said, you don't eat lamb, do you? She said, no, I don't. And I remembered from living in North America and being there, and most of my guests were North Americans, that lamb is not a big thing there. They don't eat it a lot. They haven't grown up with it. There were no commercials on the telly about having a lamb roast with your parents. Yeah, lamb. So I basically had a dinner party full of North Americans, and two of them didn't eat lamb. But I was actually okay with that. In the olden days, I might have, you know, freaked out and tried to rearrange my dishes. But I just thought, you know what, I'm just pushing through. There's enough other food. They can eat the other food. I go big on the starter.
Did they actually just not even give it a go?
No, no.
Did they have a little taste?
To be fair, they did. And I said, look, please don't. Please don't eat it. Don't feel any obligation. I feel no obligation for you to eat it, and I'm not at all offended. But they both tried it. No one, neither of them raved about it, but they both did try it. But I was totally calm about them not having it. But it just made me think that there are things that you just, it's just one of those cultural touchstones and the norms and the things you grow up with. And when you move from place to place, that you don't always think about. And obviously I, 16 years in, did not think about who my guests were and what I should be serving to them appropriately. So I thought that was a little bit of a geographically challenged situation.
And I remember, you know, your point on not growing up with television commercials about it, because, of course, lamb is huge in Australia, because there's a whole expression that we were, you know, what was it, raised off the sheep's back or whatever. Yep. And we have, you know, on Australia Day, you know, the Lamb Council or whatever it is produces a cracking ad every year about Australianisms and lamb on the barbie. But the big one, when I realised about that America or North America wasn't into it, was, you know, Naomi Watts was in a commercial in Australia, you know, where she wins a radio prize. She rings up for a radio competition and the prize is to have a night out with Tom Cruise. And she says, oh, I can't come on Sunday, you know, because mum's cooking a lamb roast. And it was an iconic, you know, radio or television sort of interview. And, of course, years later, we discover that Naomi Watts is best mates with Nicole Kidman, and Nicole Kidman is obviously married to Tom Cruise at the time. But I do remember that episode of Oprah where Nicole Kidman tried to explain that, saying, oh, you know, my best friend gave up a date with my husband because mum was cooking a lamb roast. And Oprah being quite perplexed, like, why would you cook a lamb roast? What do you mean a lamb roast? But, yes, I do remember the same thing, but it got me thinking about other things that other, you know, other friends and nationalities of things. Like I remember making pumpkin soup for some British friends, and this is before I was even an expat. This was the year before I left, and he was my boss, and he told me that only pigs ate pumpkin.
Yeah. it's the same in America. It's weird because they have butternut year round, the butternut pumpkin, but they call it a butternut squash, and they don't eat pumpkin in anything except out of a can in pies. Okay, American listeners, please don't start freaking out. But it's like it's not something that they have year round. Like when we have a roast dinner, we'll have pumpkin in our roast dinner.
Yes.
We have soup.
You would never find pumpkin in a can either.
No, no, no. So I did a bit of an Insta quiz on our Insta stories on Two Fat Expats, and I said, is there a globally acceptable meat dish to serve at a dinner party? Now, 63% of people said yes. And then I offered a poll of four meat choices, chicken, beef, lamb and pork. And of course, winner, winner, chicken dinner. It's probably the most least offensive. A lot of people wrote back and said beef was second, but by a long way. Chicken was 66, beef was 5. But a lot, you know, a lot of people wouldn't serve beef because of religious reasons of other people. Mm-hmm. Lamb, because not everyone likes it, and pork, the same religious reasons. So chicken apparently is the winner if you want to serve a globally acceptable meat dish to a dinner party.
And it's so funny where you are, right? Because I wouldn't have even put pork on the quiz where I'm based. Do you know? Number one,
I know.
It's impossible to buy. You can only buy pork from the booze shop, and there is only one booze shop. I must post. I took a photo of what the booze shop looked like the day before Ramadan. There was a line that went out the door and about a kilometer down the street. But, yeah, pork just has gone out of my conversation. I would have been crucified if I'd suggested pork at a dinner party, you know, in Qatar.
I did put pork on because there was four spots, and I thought I said meat, so I just threw it in. I knew it would be the least favourable item. And I didn't want to put fish because I don't eat seafood, so I would never, ever, ever serve fish to other people at a dinner party.
Do you know, I love seafood. None of my children eat it. None. Not one. How does that happen? Okay, moving right along. Nikki, expat relationships. I had a conversation in my kitchen this week that really, really hit home for me. And I think for many of our listeners, it will as well. So, you know, we have Helen who works with us and has been working with us for, oh, I want to say 8 years now. So, you know, Helen came to us as a 19-year-old, and our relationship has obviously developed and changed over the years, and we've had lots and lots go on in that while she's worked for us, she, you know, we started with very small children and now we have an adult child, if that makes sense. And, you know, Helen's been through me having breast cancer. We've been through Helen getting married, getting pregnant, going home to have a baby, coming back to work for us. And Helen over the years has done all sorts of fantastic, you know, classes and lessons and things, you know, along the way. Helen's English is superb. You know, she puts me to shame in the fact that she can speak a couple of languages very, you know, fluently these days. But we were standing in the kitchen having a chat about, you know, the kids had just gone back to school. I'd had child number two and number three staying with me for the school holidays, and they'd gone back, and I was obviously quite upset, and I'd had a little cry in the kitchen about, you know, that they were gone, and she'd had a little cry that they were gone as well. And we were just talking about, you know, the heartache of trying to do the right thing by your kids and that constant battle of, you know, heart versus head.
Yeah.
You know? And then Helen let me in on a little conversation that she hadn't mentioned in the past. So Helen quite often picks up part-time jobs as well. Obviously, as the kids have got older, you know, this is not a full-time gig. So if she can get other part-time work, she takes it. And while I was away, my husband had heard about a possible part-time opportunity and said to Helen, you know, do you want to go and talk to these people? She'd gone and spoken to them and then got back and said, no, look, I don't think it's going to work for me. We didn't think anything more about it. But she told me that the reason she had knocked back this job was because she'd gone to visit this woman who seemed very, very nice, but she said, you know, this woman sort of talked a lot about herself, you know, what her situation was, which, you know, anyone could mm-hmm. be blamed for doing in a job interview. You want to talk about
what the deal is.
But then this woman said to Helen, oh, you know, your boss, you know, my husband mentioned that you'd just come back from Ethiopia, you'd had a baby. And Helen said, yes, yes, you know, I had a baby. He was here for a month or so, then now he's at home with my mother. And this woman's reaction was that which I have witnessed a gazillion times when I speak about Helen, where people go, oh, wow, wow, you know, oh, gosh, you know, hand on heart, you just know that the whole thing is, I could never do that. You know, how could you leave that child? I could never do that. Anyway, Helen said this woman's reaction was so, oh, wow, you know, gosh, how, she actually said to her, how do you do that? And Helen said it just put her off so much that, you know, her husband came to pick her up. He's an Uber driver, and he came to pick her up after the interview, and she just said to him, I can't work for her. I can't, not doing it. And it just got me thinking about how often, you know, that conversation happens all the time. There are women all over the world who make these economic decisions about traveling to other countries and sending money home. And, you know, those of us who have lived in Asia, you know, we see it all the time, whether it's someone comes from the village to the city and they nanny or housekeep or, you know, do whatever they can do to get a job in the city, and they're sending that money home to their parents who are looking after the child, because that's exactly what has happened, you know, geographically and traditionally within their household, right? That the older people look after the children, the younger people go out and work. And then your gift, I guess, of age is that you then look after your grandchildren, you know, when you're older. And I know for Helen that for her, it feels very much like she has given her mother a gift, you know, because her mother worked here as a housekeeper for over 15 years and worked 7 days a week, you know, for a local family, worked
while Helen was in Ethiopia.
Yes. Yes. And then Helen came here to be with her, and then her mother, you know, watched Helen meet someone and get married. And then the gift was, okay, Mum, you go home with the baby. We'll set you up in the house. We'll send the money home and whatever. And Helen was saying, you know, it is a beautiful, beautiful thing for her to be able to get on the phone to her mum and hear what her mum's been doing and what they're doing. But she said it still hurts. Like, it still aches, you know, to see, like she said, I can't do FaceTime all the time because it's just too hard to see him every day.
Of course.
But I can do phone calls because I'm happy for the updates. Like, I'm happy to speak to my mum, but I find it very hard with FaceTime, you know, seeing him and seeing how he's going. And I admitted to Helen that I don't speak about her that much when I go back to Australia now, because I get that look from people as if I'm evil, because how could you do that? How could you harbour, you know, someone in your house and who's going through that pain and whatever? And the more I try and explain it, the worse it gets, you know, of my, because I know that my friends in Australia just simply don't understand. They don't know anyone like Helen. They've never had anyone in their life like that.
Yeah, but can we just go back to the fact that it was an interview? And the woman is giving attitude on the other person's point of view. I mean, can you imagine being in an interview and someone commenting on the way you choose to raise your children? I know that, I know it's very different, the relationship that you have with someone that works with you in your home or in your home, but I still think that in today's age and in period of enlightenment that we could perhaps have a line drawn there where we don't have to have that conversation in the interview. I'm glad though that Helen made that decision and came to that conclusion herself, and perhaps that was good that conversation was had then to save Helen heartache down the line. But I still am astounded by the fact that they would comment so freely during an interview process on somebody else's life choices. I mean, and I remember being by the pool in America and meeting new people and them saying to me, oh, I could never do what you're doing. I could never take the children away from my parents. That's just cruel. While my mother was in fact dying in another country, which they had no knowledge of. So I mean, and that was hard enough for me to take in a casual pool conversation where you would expect that kind of thing. If I was in a job interview, no thank you.
And I think the thing, Nikki, too, is imagine if you're not in Helen's position where you do have another job and you don't have a choice, you have to take that job. And I was thinking of all those women that have taken the job even though they've been through that interview, because they who never say a word
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's good. And, you know, it's very controversial because of the reasons that you've given, that people make these choices, but they make them really specifically for their economic future. And it's very hard to judge people for that.
Okay, so Nikki, location, location, location. Where did you take us this week?
Oh, we nearly finished the alphabet, Kirsty. It's so exciting. We're up to X, and X is for Xi'an. And I'm sure I didn't say that 100% correctly. Xi'an is in China.
Oh.
It's where the Terracotta Warriors are.
Oh.
So does that make sense?
Yes. Actually, I have managed to see two Terracotta Warriors because they brought them to Qatar.
Oh, of course they did. They just took them on a tour. Anyway, Jennifer and her husband have been expats for 16 years. They're international school teachers and they have lived in Uzbekistan, Saudi, KL, Indonesia, and now in Xi'an. They've been there for 4 years and they're repatriating over this summer to the US to return to look after family. So there's got a lot on their mind and they've had quite a ride. So I hope that you enjoy listening to X is for Xi'an. On a scale of 1 to 10, what would you rate your current level of in love with Xi'an?
I'd probably say a 6 or 7.
Okay. And do you think that's up or down on 12 months ago?
It's probably down. Well, probably about the same. We never really had a love for Xi'an.
Okay.
It was such a change from every other place that we've been.
Absolutely. Even though that you've lived in some very also disparate places, Indonesia, Saudi. I mean, what was it about Xi'an that was so different?
I think it's the culture of it. It's that whole socialist culture kind of. It's, you know, the thinking process and the getting around and like, oh, everything's going to be closed for the first week of October. And we wanted to experience the culture, but it's kind of been that shock to the system too, where everything looks the same. And you know, we've been overseas 16 years and been in China for 4 of those years, and we're still getting pointed at as being the white folks walking down the street.
Yeah. What about, do you have a best local find? Something that you love to do or go to or see locally?
Oh, it's fun going down a Muslim street.
Yeah.
Muslim street is this huge street. They block it off and you go get down there and they're pounding the peanut butter brittle, almost what I don't want, I'm not sure that's exactly what it's called, but it looks like peanut brittle and tastes like it. Pounding it on the old, you know, wooden stumps, and you get your traditional Chinese food down there. And then we go down a lot during Lantern Festival. So on the wall in the Xi'an, they set up lanterns around the city wall. And so you can go walk up there and look at all the lanterns lit up at night. Yeah, it's a great wall that goes through China, but in Xi'an, they have a wall around the old city center. I mean, it's kind of nice. It's a nice little walk up there. And like I said, we usually go during Lunar Festival. So they've got all the lanterns and everything up there. And they change the theme and have a theme every year for the lanterns. And walking around South Lake Park in the Dianta area is very nice.
What drives you crazy?
The lack of creativity. It's like they can't have a clear thought. It's like, this is what we've been told to do. This is like... the buses, it's like, oh, we have to go on this route. We can't go off this route, and we have to do it this way, and you can't stop any other places. People walk in, it's like, it's raining out, but they have to be sweeping the grass because they were told they have to sweep. So they stop, like, sweeping. It seems here there's more of the rigidity of everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've been to Thailand. We've been around. Obviously, we've spent 2 years in Indonesia. And here it just seems a lot more rigidity where it's like, oh, and I've been told this. They don't want to make anybody mad. Mm. And so they don't. You know, it's, they save face. They don't tell the truth all the time. And the other thing that drives crazy is the noise level. You can't have a regular conversation. Chinese, or it seems like to us that as the Chinese talk and get their voices go up and up, and you can't tell if they're yelling at each other or if it's just a regular everyday conversation.
The excitement level high.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's that. Cause then you take that and put it into, you know, a bunch of little kids. And the other thing is... The little kids are peeing and pooping wherever they want. It's getting better. They've installed a lot more public toilets, but you still, you know, I was at IKEA about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and somebody's holding their little kid over the trash can so they can go to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's certainly a cultural difference. What's one place that you'd love to live?
I would love to live Thailand. I love Thailand.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common place. I'd love to live there too. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about living an expat lifestyle?
You have to be open-minded, be able to go with the flow. Don't be, you know, you always think the worst and it's never that bad. So whatever people tell you, they're telling you the worst of the worst 90% of the time, and it's never as bad as what you think it's going to be. You know, we started this 16 years ago with taking a 2-year leave of absence from our jobs. And we went to the former Soviet Union. People are like, oh, no, they don't have this there. They don't have this there. You're going to be doing this. And I'm like, it's not that bad. 6 years in Saudi Arabia, everyone's like, you're going to a Muslim country. You're going to have to cover from head to toe. I'm like, I never covered my head the 6 years I lived there.
It's very interesting living in a place versus people that have never been there talking about what you have to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, 6 years in Saudi was quite interesting until I got my parents to come over.
Did they hold a different view afterwards?
They do. We tried to get them to come when we lived in Uzbekistan, and they wouldn't come over because they were both working. They took the time off to come over to Saudi Arabia, and they're like, it's so different. They're like, I don't think I could live here. But it's not what you picture. It's not people carrying guns around all the time. It's not, you know, women walking 6 feet behind the boat, men or whatever. It's just not the picture that you get of everything. They're like, everyone was so nice, they're so caring, they're so helpful.
Yeah. What's the biggest lesson that you've learned in the whole, if you reflect on your 16 years of expat life?
That's a hard one. I think it's kind of take stuff with a grain of salt. You know, it's not always the worst. Things happen, but it's always going to work out in the end. I mean, we've had broken bones in China. We've had my daughter, I think had the measles when she was a year and a half in Saudi Arabia. You know, it might seem chaotic to you, but it always seems to work itself out in the end. People are there to help and support you. You really have to rely on your support network that's in your country, within the community that you're living in. Build up that community that you're living with, and they're really there for you. They've always got your back. We've been able to say, oh my goodness, we're going on a trip. You know, we need this. Will you do this for us? And people are always willing to help you. You know, we left my daughter when we went to a job interviews in America. We flew to America for a week and left our daughter with our neighbor that she really, you know, she knew her, but it never really spent a ton of time with her. Left her there for a week, and my daughter's like, I had the best time. I learned Italian. She taught me how to make pizza and spaghetti. She introduced me to Nutella. She's like, Nutella's my favorite thing in a jar.
What's not to like about Nutella?
Exactly.
What's not to like about Nutella? I agree.
So does my daughter. I'm not a fan, but yeah, we can't have big jars of Nutella in our house because they go very quickly.
Oh, that was really interesting. I'd love to see the whole lanterns and whatever. I've only been to China with you, Nikki, when I've been to Shanghai.
Shanghai. I thought it was quite interesting. I spoke to Jennifer, of course, for ages and ages, more than we've put in the interview. But I talked to her about how her daughter was feeling about repatriating because she was born overseas. And she made a comment that really struck with me. She's scared about being in a classroom with only English speakers because where she is now, less than 5% of people in her current grade are native English speakers.
And why does that scare her?
Well, her mother thinks that maybe she's scared of being the same as everybody else. Like it's good that everyone's different where she is now. That's how she feels about it. But it's interesting. Mm. It's just interesting to hear what children are thinking in their approach to repatriation. So,
yeah. Maybe that's not something you'd have at the top of your. What are they going to be worried about when they repatriate? Yeah. But it definitely is an expat kid thing when they're looking at just if everybody suddenly looks like they look when they're heading home. But you know, I'm thinking America's a really diverse place. I guess it depends where they're going.
Yeah, they're heading back to southern Kansas. So I'm not sure. I've never lived there, so I'm not sure about how that's going to look. But yeah, so they've got big things ahead, but 16 years behind them of wonderful memories and places they've lived.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. Reading, writing, watching, listening. What are you watching, Kirsty? What are you reading? Actually, what are you reading right now?
At the moment, all I'm reading is Train timetables and Airbnb reviews because I'm trying to get my trip finalized. But I did download a new book yesterday. It was Jacqueline Moriarty's new book. Have you heard about this, Nikki?
Leanne Moriarty or Jacqueline someone else?
Jacqueline Moriarty. Leanne.
Never heard of Jacqueline.
Leanne Moriarty has two sisters that both write as well. And and one of them is Jacqueline. And obviously Leanne Moriarty is the well-known sister of the three. But Jacqueline's written this book called Gravity is the Thing. And I just keep seeing it pop up everywhere with people saying things like, best book I've ever read. And the one that really made me go, okay, I've got to download this book, was a girlfriend who's a writer wrote, I have spent my time reading this book thinking, wow, so this is how you actually write a book. And she said, I'm stumbling between feeling like I should just never bother writing again because there's someone doing this so well, to just being in awe of the book. And another girlfriend who finished it a couple of weeks ago said, it's just one of those books that 2 weeks later, it's still there, front and center in your mind. So Gravity is the Thing. I've just downloaded it, and I plan to read it in the next week or so when I'm done with all the train timetables and the confirmation bookings on Airbnb.
So the train timetables, are you reading them in Italian, or are you getting some Google Translate going?
No. I'm just doing, they're all in English online. So I had put a call out to everyone saying, what do you do? Because I have a friend who actually lives in Milan, and he gave me an app to use to book the train. And then when I asked everybody else, everyone was like, no, use this one. So I was thinking, that's interesting. A friend who's just moved to Milan is only just there, right? It's a new move for him.
Okay, fair enough.
Early days. So, but yes, no, everybody has told me to use a different app. And at this stage, it looks easy. I'm at that thing of how long is it going to take me to train it from Cinque Terre to Rome, and have I completely overexceeded my thoughts? And oh, look, it's two trains, not one. Yeah, I'm still at that stage.
Oh, the days of Ural! I remember when I backpacked around Europe on the train. I haven't been on trains much since. I need to do that again. Okay, well, I've been monitoring the footy competition, as you know.
Which I keep forgetting to do.
The top five, there's been a little bit of movement, but just to let you know, Kirstie, you're in fifth spot. You're equal fifth spot with your sister.
Oh.
And with Bombers Fan Abroad. In fourth spot is Lissy Hawk, which is Melissa's someone. And third spot is Donna Coghill. Helena Has No Idea is coming second, which I'm a big fan of Helena having no idea.
You do have an idea, obviously.
And Andrew Casey, who was fifth last time we talked, is now in first position. So someone needs to topple him from that. Every week the lead changes, so that's quite good. I'm racing up the ladder, and now I'm in 16th position. But I think that was facilitated by only those people that didn't submit their tips last week. So if you don't submit your tips, you get all the away teams, and only one away team won last week. And I got 7 out of 9, so I was pretty happy with that. But I'm still only out of my bottom spot because of that. Only one away team lost. One away team won.
Yes, and it wasn't mine.
I was going to say, you got 6 and I got 7, and I think the difference in our tipping might have been that you tipped Port Adelaide and I did not. Did you tip Port Adelaide?
Yes. My sister and I both tipped with our hearts, not our heads, and both knew, like we knew, no, there was no way our team was going to win, but we just couldn't, because the week before our team was not meant to win, or the week before.
And they did.
And they did. And we both felt very guilty that we hadn't run with them because they were playing last year's premiers. But yeah, no, and they didn't just lose, they got smashed. Like in the first quarter, the other team had kicked 7 goals and six goals and we hadn't kicked one. It was a crisis, Nikki. It was a bad, bad, bad moment. But it's the showdown in South Australia this week, which is just huge. I've seen some beautiful social media things this week, actually, Nikki, with the football. I should say that game where our team got smashed, there was a little boy who came on at the end who was his family were supporters of the opposing team, and he's terminally ill with brain cancer, and he got to toss the coin at the beginning of the game, and then the team carried him off on their shoulders. And oh, I'm getting a bit sad about it now, but the bit that gets me every time is his dad just looks so happy throughout the whole thing, and then you can see his dad's trying very hard not to get emotional when he's getting carried off the ground. Oh, gets me every time. But I just, you know, I've talked before about football and what I love about it in communities. There's another one with a guy called John who has Down syndrome and is a mad Melbourne supporter. And this week they showed he travels 5 hours to get to the games every weekend. And they had his sister who was interviewed. He said, we do a 4-hour drive and then we do an hour by train. And they said, why do you do the train? Because John likes the train and John decides that we're catching the train and that's what we do. We catch the train. But they had John with his favourite player, number 4, on the sort of boundary line at the end. Number 4 saw him and made a complete beeline for him across the ground to give him a cuddle after the game. And it's just, you know, that beautiful vision where you see someone that is just so filled with pure joy. Like, it is just absolute, unconcocted, real life joy, and you just think, oh, this is fantastic. And football clubs, you know, men and women's clubs and soccer and all those, they do these things week after week after week for people. You know, it's beautiful.
I saw that.
Yeah, I loved it. So, Nikki, movies and telly, what are you watching?
I'm watching Imposters Season 2. So I've talked about Imposters on the podcast before, Season 1. Season 2 is out now. If you liked it at the time, I just happened to stumble across it. I'm a big fan. I watched Season 2. It's funny and I enjoy it. It's, of course, about a woman who sets herself up as a partner to a series of people and then ghosts them and leaves with all their money. And they band together to find her. And it's the adventures of the ex-husbands and wives. Right. Which
yes.
I really enjoyed.
Oh, I need to watch that. I haven't watched series one
yeah,
yet.
Yeah, no, I did really enjoy that. The other thing quickly that I watched, which was very sweet, which was at the start, of course, we're four episodes in now, but the first episode of Game of Thrones of this season, there was a video of James Corden's parents watching Game of Thrones and they'd never seen it before. So it was like a little goggle box of James Corden's parents and it was a very sweet video and I'll put the link in.
Oh, fantastic. Hey, Nikki, just on Imposters, what do you watch it on? Where do you see it?
I watch that on Netflix. It's on my Netflix.
Okay, I am loading it onto my Netflix.
Perfect. What about you? What are you watching?
I have watched a few things lately. So on Netflix, there's a new series out called Dead to Me with Christina Applegate.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
Yes,
that?
I have. Yes.
And this is where I'm very impressed with Netflix in that I think it must have been last weekend. It immediately popped up into my you should be watching this and obviously into everybody else's, do you know, because all of a sudden you just saw everyone. But it was like, oh, you really, they do make sure that whatever's new and in your sort of genre gets in front of you. Like, I'm always impressed with it when algorithms work.
Yes.
Because so often
they don't.
Algorithms don't, or we find them insulting. And Dead to Me was great. It was really good. So the story is Christina Applegate's husband is killed in a hit and run. And it is one of those series where you, at the end of each episode, are thinking, how is that going to play out? Oh, I thought I had it, but maybe I don't have it. Do you know that sort of series? It's great. We're also doing Killing Eve Series 2. We're watching that on ABC iView. I loved Killing Eve Series 1. Series 2 is not disappointing in any shape or form. It is just as good. So good one.
I'm glad to know that.
Nikki, you've talked about The Bold Type before. It's on Stan in Australia.
It's on Hulu in the States as well.
There you go. We started it when child number 2 and 3 were here, just in that whole how do you find something for everybody to watch,
yeah,
you know, that's not going to be awkward and uncomfortable. And, you know, I think I did put a note out on the Two Fat Expats Facebook page saying, or Facebook group saying, help, you know, what can we watch? And there were some great suggestions. We actually ended up watching Chris Lilley's Lunatics.
Oh, very controversial. I didn't watch it because of all the controversy.
Yes. Well, same here. I am not a Chris Lilley fan. I didn't like any of his original work. I wasn't a Summer Heights High fan, and I just found his humour incredibly juvenile. And, you know, back in the day, he was racist, and I could never understand how he got away with being racist, like why that was funny. You know, there was always kind of this inference that, you know, you weren't getting the joke if you were finding him that way. Do you know, there was something wrong with you.
Yes.
But anyway, Lunatics, and I did see a few friends of mine posted things like, oh, I watched 5 minutes of Lunatics and then, you know, it just made me stabby and I had to turn it off, or, you know, I just didn't like it at all. So my kids were very keen to see Lunatics. My husband and my children sat there in hysterically thigh-slapping, pants-wetting laughter of everything. They loved it. I sat there stone-faced going, yeah, I still don't like you, Chris Lilley. I'm still not digging at all. I have to admit, there were a couple of things where I did have a little slight giggle. He has a character who is a lesbian South African dog whisperer, and I must admit I did laugh at just the insanity of the humour of what he was doing. He's definitely very, very good at making himself look like a complete idiot, do you know? And there is the Gold Coast real estate agent with the unusually big bottom, whose entire family has unusually big bottoms, and they are what you would do as the stereotypical Gold Coast real estate family. Well, what I found interesting about it was, we all know with teenage children it is becoming nigh impossible to get everyone to sit down and watch TV together.
Yes.
Right? We've become this sad,
single screen people
species. Yep, it's awful. You know, I watched a fantastic interview with Stephen Fry on Graham Norton about just how we've just completely lost that whole storytelling of sitting around together around the campfire or sitting around together, whatever. But what I found with this series with my family was, while I wasn't on the joke, they all definitely were. And for the first time in forever, I experienced the TV going off and then them all laughing about it together for the next, you know, few days while everyone was still here, but like having in jokes about it together and pretending to be different characters and it coming up in conversation. You know, that thing where everyone has that conspiratorial, you know, share of something, which we just haven't had.
That is a good thing. And my husband and I were talking about that on the weekend, that we don't have a lot of situations where we just like casually come together as a family and have an enjoyable conversation. Yes. Or it's all mainly planned things. So like either we're sitting down to dinner or let's everyone go out for a walk or let's go to lunch or let's do something. There's not a lot of sort of just casual, unplanned conversations. And we were talking about how we could change that. I don't know if we can.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, my favourite thing at the beach is, you know, we all cook dinner together and then we sit outside on the deck chairs and we all, you know, have a chat and sit. And quite often we will sit there for hours and hours and hours, you know, after dinner, just having a giggle. That's so sad, isn't it, that we don't have. I think about all the times with my family of where we were just sitting around together through complete, you know, boredom and lack of opportunity.
No, but that's the thing. It's good to be bored, people say. There's all those books about how it's good to be bored.
Oh, it is. It is. You know, I spent a long time, my sister was a bit older than me, and I spent a lot of time with my dog on my own, you know, like walking around and making up games and doing things with the dog. And I often think that became a great source of creativity, you know, to have your mind wander and you have to come up with things to do.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, so that's my thing. If you don't like lunatics, maybe your kids will. And if you have a husband with a juvenile sense of humour, he probably will too. And just one last one, Nikki. Everything I've sort of talked about has been slickly produced and looks pretty and done well with a big budget. One thing I did watch was Mum, as in M-U-M, the way we like to spell
it. The proper way.
Which I watched on ABC iView, and I believe the Brits can watch on BBC Player. This series, I just love it, and I've been watching it with Mr. 12 as well. And the premise of it is a mum who's late 50s, early 60s maybe, who loses her husband of, you know, 20-odd years. She has an adult son who has a girlfriend. She lives in a very normal house. She is a very normal-looking person, and she has very normal-looking friends. And the entire series is set within her home. And it is that great, you know, British humour and British production where, like, I guess, Afterlife, where nothing's glamorous, but she and it is sad in parts and hysterically funny in others. But it is as a woman who is 50 and approaching, you know, that invisible age, and who also is a mother and becomes the doer of things, and maybe not unappreciated, that would be too much martyr, but it's very much of her life of what she is to others. Do you know, I really like it. I really, really like it. So it drops on ABC iView every Wednesday, and I think we're about 4 or 5 episodes in. It's just 30 minutes of easy viewing, do you know, not a lot of drama, but just a good 30 minutes.
Okay, good to know. Actually, I might check that out. That sounds very interesting. Sounds appealing to me.
Yes. All right. What are you listening to? What's your podcast of the week?
What I'm listening to, Problem Child. So Kelly Lane. So we talked recently in podcasts about Kelly Lane. There were documentaries and podcasts done with the ABC people who produced the documentary about Kelly Lane. And now there's another person or organization who's doing a podcast called Problem Child. And I guess I didn't watch the documentaries. I know you did, but I did listen to the podcast at the time. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to listen to this, and I'm it's not bad. I'm enjoying it.
So what is the general feeling in Problem Child? Is it, do they talk to Kelly Lane?
They don't talk to Kelly Lane. They seem to indicate right now, it might be going off the rails, and I'm not saying it is or it isn't, but they seem to indicate that they feel that the ABC documentary was very much influenced by Kelly Lane's story, and that the ABC tried to prove and believed Kelly Lane's story. And so they're trying to say that's where they all went wrong. You can't listen to her, to the story, and believe it. You have to look at these facts. So they've interviewed, in the last episode, they interviewed a woman who worked at the hospital for years and years about where all the exits were and how she said she exited the hospital. And there was a very detailed discussion about that. So not having seen the documentaries, I can't see where there are differences, but they're using some recordings of Kelly, but they didn't talk to her for it. So they're taking a different point of view. They're saying they're sort of investigating the investigation in a way.
Interesting. Okay, that sounds good.
That's one thing I'm listening to. The other one is I'm listening to 10% Happier. So last week I went to dinner with some work colleagues of my husband, and one of the people at the dinner was doing a master's in digital marketing and very into podcasts. So she and I spent most of the dinner, you know, swapping podcasts. Did you listen to this one? What about this one? What about this one? We spent a lot of time. And one of the ones that I walked away thinking I'm really going to listen to is one called 10% Happier. Now, I know that there's books, I know there's meditation apps and courses all around 10% Happier, but I had no prior knowledge of any of that. I just went in and listened to the podcast, which is done by Dan Harris, who's a US TV personal presenter. I know, Kirsty, have you heard of 10% Happier before, or the podcast or the book?
No, I haven't.
Okay,
I haven't.
So it's just basically a way into, so mind. It's about mindfulness and meditation, but not in a annoying way. You know, if you know, people that are very into that are you know, and they've spent a long time, you know, investigating it, and they have very strong views about it, etc. It's not really like that. It's more sort of an overview, just an overall look at it. So I listened to one episode, which it's not short or a quick listen. It was 1 hour and 55 minutes. And it was an episode with a guy called Johan Hare, who is a British social scientist and commentator. And he has dealt with depression himself. And he spent time going around the world and examining how depression is treated in different countries and how they treat it in a non-chemical way. So what they do that's not medication related. And it was really, it was interesting to me. I've got mindfulness and meditation as, not mindfulness, but meditation. I really want to learn how to meditate. You know, there are lots of benefits to it apparently. And I just always thought I'd never be able to do it. But this has made me think that maybe I can. So I've listened to one episode. The next one I've got queued to go is one with Brené Brown, who we all know is, you know, everyone's a big fan of Brené Brown.
Have you watched her new thing about courage on Netflix that everyone's talking about?
I haven't. That's no. I TED Talks as long as I can probably go with Brené, but I don't know. Maybe I will. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I can't really get into the deep stuff, but I actually really enjoyed this podcast. So hopefully I can go further down my track for meditation. And what about you? What are you listening to?
Okay, so I, like a lot of Australia, listen to Who the Hell is Hamish? Did you
listen to that one? Who doesn't listen to Who the Hell is Hamish? I like how
it's done now.
Yeah, but I like how sometimes you always like, oh, I'm not sure about crime-based podcasts, but the Australian ones that are done well, I think they're good.
Well, I got onto Who the Hell is Hamish in a weird way, in that I actually listened to the interview on Mamma Mia with Mia Friedman, where she interviewed the woman who was married to Hamish. Yes. And because of listening to that.
Who was an expat.
That's right. And I wanted to know a bit more about that story too, the expat. I was, can we just go back to the expat bit? I want to know what happened. But, yes, and Hamish obviously was a con man, and she married him not knowing of all the con jobs he'd done before, or knew vaguely of bits and pieces, and then it all comes out that he is just a complete cad, and without ruining it for everyone, really deeply affects her, the life of her family. But yes, I really enjoyed Who the Hell is Hamish and listened to it I think probably all within a sort of couple of days, you know, because it was all old news by the time I got to it and loaded. The other thing I have been listening to and watching, Nikki, is YouTube fitness videos. I have got onto Exit, they say, which is X-H-I-T. And I got onto it because I saw a picture, and I wish I could tell you where, but it was maybe a personal post somewhere, where a woman had taken a picture of her arm, you know, 5 weeks ago on her arm today, and said, I just did this video for four times a week, you know, for the last 4 or 5 weeks, and took a photo before and after. And I was like, wow, that looks really good. And it's like a 12-minute video. And I suddenly realized, because here going to the gym for me, this is the reason I put it here, is I wondered about expat women who are living remotely, whether this is an answer for going to the gym. But also, I would love to go to one of those F45s and one of those, you know, centres that you see around the world. But I am basically too unfit to go to fitness classes at this point in my life, I reckon. And I am the person who is currently doing fitness videos at home, so I might one day be fit enough to go to the fitness class. So, but I've really enjoyed them. For me, they're easy because you can just, you don't have to have fabulous exercise gear. You can do them in the comfort of your own bedroom, even if you want to, and then jump straight in the shower without having to, because to me, I do have a gym close by, but it is 50 degrees these days, and we are, you know, I do walk down to the gym in the heat, but it just cuts out that travel time of, you know, the whole getting yourself ready to look half decent, loading up the pod, you know, the podcast, the whatever. I now just put on these YouTube clips on my iPad in my bedroom, and I do 12 minutes of arms and 12 minutes of legs, and then jump straight in the shower and away I go. And I don't know why I haven't been doing this for years, because it's so bloody easy. Have you ever done fitness via YouTube?
I haven't. But now I need to see the links and I need to see your before and after photos.
I will do. I will do. And the thing about these links is you see how many views these people have had and, you know, the comments of what people do. It's like, how did I not know this was a thing that the rest of the world was doing?
Yes, no, it's a thing. It's a thing. It's like people finding out now that intermittent fasting is a thing. I'm like, intermittent fasting is the new CrossFit. Come on, there's been people doing it for years.
Now, I saw, Nikki, you took a photo just before, so I'm going to take a photo too.
I took a photo so I could put it on our Insta stories.
Which you are very good at doing, the Insta stories. How do people find us on Insta, Nikki? Tell me.
On Instagram, we're at Two Fat Expats. And we do more Insta stories and actual photos in the feed, which I'm finding is more and more what people do basically now these days anyway. Yeah. I spend a lot more time living in my stories than I do in the feed. But every time we have a new episode, we obviously put that in the feed as well so people will know.
Yes, this might be a nice time to remind people how to leave a review. We actually had a great review this week, London Girl 5382. She wrote, not only every episode has highly relevant information and helpful tips about anything from schooling, finance, technology, books, expat etiquette, and so much more for those who live an expat life, but they are also so relatable, fun, and Nikki, intelligent. Thank you.
Does that say Nikki intelligent?
No, I just added that Nikki bit in there. Thank you, Kirsty and Nikki, for all the hard work that you're doing, making this podcast and helping expats everywhere feel a little bit more at home around the world. Much love from Doha. Oh, I need to meet London girl who's in Doha, I do believe. Anyway, thank you very much for that review. You can, of course, leave us a review via Apple Podcasts or iTunes or however you view your podcast. They really, really help get the message out there. But, yeah, please tell your friends if you enjoy the podcast, spread the word and let people know.
Yes, we love to hear from you because otherwise we're just talking to ourselves, although now we can see each other. So now we're talking to each other as well as ourselves.
I know.
You're in a tank top and I'm in a woolly cardigan.
Well, I'm in my and this is the thing, right? I would never wear this tank top out of the house, right? But because I know I'm going to do my 12-minute arms and legs once I get up the fire for you, I can wear the tank top and I don't care. I feel very comfortable. No, I am really digging it. Can you tell? And I've worked out because you can do it. You know, we have YouTube on our Apple TV downstairs. I'll be able to do it when we head to the beach. I'm very, very happy with the fitness videos. And you don't need equipment. You don't need
There's no equipment. It's all body weight based.
Yes. Well, in the arms one, I've got 2 5-pound hand weights that I use, but in the legs ones, no. And it kills. Like, it's definitely working and hurting in all the right places, but it's just fast, good, done. Okay, now in the shower, let's get dressed and go.
Perfect. Okay, well, we'll look for the – I'll definitely post links in the show notes for this week. And great chatting to you. Great seeing you, Kirsty.
All right, bye.
Bye.